Thanks, Joan. Thanks, Jimmy, Dawn, all of you for your hard work, and thanks to everyone for coming. I'm going to get right into it, and I'm going to read some newer poems. Some of you that out there that have heard me before know about a lot of the poems that I write about my work experiences as a plumber and in the construction industries, and so a lot of those poems will reflect on a lot of those experiences that I've had. And this first poem will also get into some of the things that have been terrible things that have been happening in this country of late that shall remain nameless. This is called Work of Hands. I'm taking my ears off again for the television. Buds from a headphones shoved into a place where Patti Smith is screaming. Because 2 minutes from a press conference was all I needed to hear about how the world would end, with another lie under a golden shower in a Russian hotel room. I'd mention his name, but I'd rather talk about Patty again, skinnier than a flagpole, shaking her hippie dreads on MTV, belting out Gloria and People Have the Power. I didn't know much at 15, but I knew enough to keep the sound down low the first time I heard her shriek. Rainy Saturdays, I laid the needle of her down in my bedroom, set the world inside me spinning. By the time the bus arrives, I'm 16, and there's no two-hour delay, no cancellation to keep the Scud missile, school bus yellow, from crashing into the glass door of my adolescence. That ninth grade classroom to be called names as if they were curses, as if it was a power they held over me. I wrote poems to give hell a name, trading punk and weirdo for 20 years in a pickup truck, exhaust and college blowing out into muddy job sites, men drinking coffee, running jackhammers, blasting country music, the worst music ever invented. Sorry. They stand at break and tell black jokes while I stared into a hole even darker. But I'm new at this. In the morning, I'll turn off my radio and go to a place no one wrote a song for yet, where work waits in the freezing rain, in a ditch line, in that dirty boiler room, where a man in a rebel flag bandana holds a ladder for me, asks if I voted yet. If I am the leg climbing up, he is the hand holding on, my foot on the last rung, twisted into a place where the pipe always goes in, where my silence isn't something that has a name. And we go on like this, without talking, doing this work of hands, speaking to each other in the mute language of the body, the hunched back, the shaking wrist, this bearing down and turning, both of our hands on the pipe, wrenching it down, driving it home. Thanks. So I was talking to Jen Ashburn and before this about an experience that I had the night before my plumbing exam, where deer dove into my truck that was about a month old. So, and I says, I wrote a poem about this, so I'm going to read that. It's called Afraid. And this was recently published by Vox Populi, and I wanted to thank Michael Sims for that. You were afraid they could tell by looking you were that kind of man. Because of the dead deer who dove into the front end of your truck head first, I saw horns, you said, and they asked, why didn't you stop for the rack? It was because you were shaking and your breath left your body like an apparition. Because you left him there, carried his blood with you on a dented fender, while plumbers in hard hats joked, caressed twisted steel as if it was a trophy. Looked at you differently after this, handed you tools instead of, hey, get this, let you drill holes by yourself in steel roofs. Knees bent, grinder bearing down, throwing sparks screaming into air. Don't say anything. Your only defense is to cut metal in skips and burning stars, sharp as the windshield, afraid to say the wrong thing, beautiful instead of cool and good job. Like how unwashed denim can save you, stiffen your walk in the harsh, shrill wind, and grab a wrench, something heavy enough to kill a man or tighten a nut. Everyone here looking tough without trying, grabbing their crotches to adjust, spit chew, stare longer than they should at you, as if they know, and they do. Thank you. So, I guess I should explain this title before I even say it. Some of you may have heard the kind of crude cliche or remark, this person's useless as tits on a boar. But I was on a job site and this guy said that to me, but he changed the, I guess he got it wrong, but he said useless as tits on a boy. So this is tits on a boy. Because everyone here is older than you means it's your job to carry down the concrete saw, the mini jackhammers down the ladder, the wrenching of your back, the quiver of your knees. Because of thieves, you chain 40 hours of work to rusty I-beams, the wet saw that numbed your hands, the hammer drill that kicked you off a 12-foot ladder, smacked the work ethic out of your wrists. It's not safe to wear a watch here, but you'll know it's over when they tell you it is. When someone pulls a static radio by its tail and Led Zeppelin stops playing. No one invites anyone to anything, but you'll know it's Friday from the plume of exhaust, the rattling trucks you're meant to follow to a bar you've never heard of, sit next to a man who called you useless as tits on a boy, laughing. Keep watching as their faces change with every shot they throw back, the next beer they buy you. They're smiling. They've waited their whole lives for this. Thank you. So this is the last of those plumbing work poems that I'm going to read. And this is sort of a rant, if you will, or an ode or a mantra on that experience. It's called Why I Write. Because my heart is a bag of tools and my eyes are painted on with plumber's grease. Because this weather of rust is raining from broken ceilings instead of sky, coloring me in half shades of regret. And I'm afraid of becoming a statue of bones, the cut, the ache, the whiskey, and the sweat. This spidering in and out of pipework, carrying the hair and the toothpaste and the day and the dead skin cells of the world, the earth, is always under my fingernails. I'm the crack open, the reach inside. I'm the song of rotten pipes, the shut mouth, hand over nose or face, that stripped valve in your basement that spins and spins. I'm the stuffed shitter. The fixer, invisible technician of dissonance, this auger's metal tongue screwing holes in hell, this sewer smell leaking into the air. I'm a smoke-filled flannel in a bar full of laughter. Happy hour drafts drowning the dreams of men. I know there are exhaust pipes and pickup trucks that rattle like Buddhist mantras. There are rainbows in the grease trails of oil slicks. There are pieces of me that won't always be broken. And things everyone wants to close into a hole. Slide down the echo chamber of memory, and sometimes a 4-inch pipe is big enough to swallow this. I know there are pipes made to look like cathedral pillars and NASA space shuttles collecting dust in the basement of my nephew's school. I know flight has sometimes little to do with taking to the air, but a mind broken free from a clog. I know that people don't question where their pipes go, just there are people like me who bury them. I know every Mountain Dew bottle, drop of sweat, and broken shoelace I left behind in a ditch felt like an offering. I know that the sound of an excavator leaving a job site sounds like longing. That when I walk past a construction site, the stirred up dust makes me feel invisible. And I know that my hand is a shark that has to keep moving, and hungers like this, I can smell them when they happen. The first cut, the first drop blossoming. Slide the work gloves on, suck it up. Remember this. Don't ever tell anyone. Thank you. So I'm going to change gears here and read a Pittsburgh poem. The Giant Eagle that I shop at has this really, to me it was very surreal when I first experienced it. I'm not that big of a Steeler fan, but during Steeler Sunday I was at a Giant Eagle, and instead of the loudspeaker carrying like price checks and things like that, they were broadcasting the game. It was on so loud, it was just this really weird, crazy, surreal experience of cheering and screams. So this is about that experience. It's called 10 Items or Less. The woman who grabs my cans has less bling on than anyone else. But because it's Steeler Sunday, I keep ducking my head below the flower lei, the black and gold banner that says Yins are in Steeler country. Oatmeal pies are on sale, and she says she likes these kind too, but stops to ask why I'm not wearing Steelers, and what's my problem is if I've rejected some birthright. And she's not wrong, but I'm not here to take over her black and gold planet. I'm just here for a few unbroken eggs, 1 pound of chipped ham, and a receipt, but there's this soccer mom in a Palomalu jersey swearing at her kid to put down that phone and help her shove nacho bags, cartons of cigs up the ramp to get scanned. Everyone here is either panic-stricken or frozen to the screams of kickoffs, staticky loudspeakers crackling with stats instead of price checks, which way the wind is blowing, and I almost get it. I almost envy the bliss of forgetting the job, the rust hole in the muffler, the unmowed yard, to be a part of something I'll never be. I can tell just by looking that everyone here has to work tomorrow. The Palomalu mom, that young kid with the HVAC work shirt on, everyone in 10 items or less, taking their hats off for the anthem, just waiting for something to happen. So, two poems, and I'm going to dedicate this next poem to... dedicating this poem to Jen Ashburn, who writes so many beautiful poems about family and a lot of great mom poems. So this is a recent poem that I wrote about my mom. It's called Full Moon. Tonight, when my mother sees it, it's hovering through a beam of stars. The full moon bald in its harshness, cracked like her ceiling's plaster from the roof leaks I never fixed. Did you see how big it is? She asks. But I'm on my cell, driving under its spotlight, going home through a blindness I can't name. A moon so huge, so insistent on illumination. The weather at 11 mentions positions, how the tides and the winds will affect things in countries far away from her. But tomorrow will bring another purpose. Yesterday's coffee, hot again, and the cable truck hauling fiber optics, laying out its spiderwork of lines, the 500 channels she can't live without. I'm leaving my mother home again to a remote control that works. The blue glow of her shows, Masses in Rome, or the elimination round of a cooking program. Whoever can make the avocado look sexy gets to stay. She's happy now to never fall in love with ingredients, to learn the advice she'll never take, Sunday dinners when she'd wash fettuccine like it's laundry, cook it scalding hot till it's stiff, unravel rubber lengths stuck to the bottoms of pots. But dinner is a mother I can't bear to judge. What can I do but swallow? Ask for more meatballs, hard as craters. One more dollop of sauce, because someday the phone will stop ringing. Someday no one will call my name. At home, the Discovery Channel is talking about moons, artist renditions of chalky white devastation, rivers filled with nothing but memory, tide and shore, the years of weathering, becoming basin, shell. They are emptying her car out on the interstate after the crash. Shrapnels of coins and gravel, strewn clothes. I'm okay, she says, calling me for a ride home. That's how it is sometimes. To be loved is to be held down by something you can't see. The sleeping arm of a lover. Or the mother who needed a ride, but you're paralyzed with exhaustion. Sometimes the only thing the day can offer you is sleep. A moon you wouldn't think twice about. That it will be there tomorrow and the next, doing its bright purpose. Inevitable as a phone call or gravity, pulling the living close to it, never letting it go. So it's this is my last poem, and thank you for being a patient, attentive audience. It's really weird. It seems like every reading I do, or at least a lot of readings I do, someone reads a poem that has something in it from one of the poems that I'm going to read. So Leanne read a poem about pizza, so I'm going to read a pizza poem. This is called Spooky Pizza Friday. Spooky Pizza Friday was what we called it, like a holiday or good sex, something that demands a name, leaves you breathless with sweat, and at least one good cigarette. This is Friday, but even before 7 a.m., we are sending texts. Can't wait to see you, or till this is over, covert as teens or spies. Inside the pink bathroom stalls in your office, at a light changing green, where I'm replying with red lip emoticons in my pickup to a chorus of horns, middle fingers sticking out of windows. But instead of go, I'm thinking of a two-topping special. And the coupon I left on the desk at home, the 30-minute wait at night for the passenger seat to get red hot, for the windows to get fogged up like a first date. But listen, I'm talking about food here, how the swirls of cheese slumps down the comforters of a spongy crust, pepperoni burning the cardboard air with the zest of its salt. I'm driving home from Fellini's Pizza toward the beginning of the story, where the plot is always based on true events. The road freezing over, the unforgiving curves, the slick patches I just miss. I can see my truck flipped over, my head against the dashboard, cracked windshield, the wheels in midair still spinning. But this is the Friday I have enough tread to recover. Spin into the harmless grass in time to make it home, the pizza still steaming. I want to believe it's because we're so tired and deserve the desert island of our couch, to be envious of our cats again, knitted together like scarves. Because for 2 hours we can forget arthritis, the sister in the hospital, and walk into televised darkness. Follow four unsuspecting co-eds as they get together, then split back up again. Set up mics and cameras, say, make sure you get this, or is there a spirit here who wishes to speak? They listen for the whispers of phantoms, and just like them, we are stupidly waiting for the mist of special effects, the deep voice bellowing, get out into a night darker than the time you were 18 and shaking in your bed. Old enough to tell a shadow or an open closet from the shape of your father who never came back. No footstep, no banging pipe mistaken for, I miss you, you'll get over this. In the movie, it's the crucial moment of discovery where we are always pausing it for bathroom breaks and another slice, because of a story so bad it's good, and who wants to see anyone survive it? The dead jock, the cheerleader panicking in the basement, who witnessed something so terrible no one could possibly believe her. In the end, the priest never says the right thing. The stained glass shatters into screams. The evil is always bigger than he is. Some monsters, he'll say, never leave. But we don't think about what this could mean. We hit play again and lean in together, waiting. Thank you. So quickly, I have a book, The Almost Sound of Snow Falling. If you're interested, come see me. Thank you for listening.